This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
This is Dave Meltzer with Entrepreneurs the Playbook, and every once in a while, there's an entrepreneur that just hits me in my heart. And I don't get jealous or envious, but I certainly admire this person, David Adelman. He is the amazing CEO of Campus Apartments, co-founder and vice chairman of FS Investments, and founder of Darko Capital, but much, much more, as you'll find out. Welcome, David, to the Playbook.
David, thanks for having me.
All right, I got to start with what we were talking about previously. Coming from my family where the fetus wasn't fully developed till after graduate school, my brother went to Harvard biochem major, and ends up being a rabbi, speaks six languages, has a PhD in social ethics. Other brother went to Wharton. I'm the only one that didn't go to the Ivy Leagues. In as much as that's disappointing to my mom, I did okay. But I have never met someone that has parlayed the bar mitzvah money as well as you. And so I was hoping you could tell me at such a young age, 13, how you became a self-made entrepreneur and where you put that $2,000 bar mitzvah investment that has led to where you are today.
Look, it's a funny story. It's a good story. It started with the gambling problem I had when I was 11 years old.
Okay, I'll just. I wish I was your friend.
just come out with it. So I think the important things in life are about the people who you surround yourself with, who mentors, all of that. And I've been really blessed and fortunate to have a great mentor and my partner, a guy named Alan Horowitz, who's almost 80 years old, who literally was that person you called uncle who wasn't really your uncle growing up. And he's the founder of Campus Apartments. And so literally I'm 11 years old playing basketball with Uncle Alan. And I said, I bet I can beat you. He said, I'm going to teach you about gambling. And I lost my, I guess I had a thing as a kid, like, I bet you, like a little kid thinks they're going to win. And like most people let the 11-year-old kid win, not Alan. Alan said, I'm going to teach you about betting. And I lost my basketball, my football, my baseball glove. And I don't know if you remember, David, when you were kids, you had a bank book that said how much money you had in the bank.
Yeah.
I lost that too. And I literally had to go to his office, Campus Apartments, literally in this building where I am today. And I had to stack lumber and sweep sawdust, okay, once a week. And each time I'd go there and I'd get one thing back. And I guess my parents thought this was like great values for an 11-year-old kid, you know, who knew. And so literally I did that. And he kind of like taught me about the real estate business as a kid. And so literally my bar mitzvah is 2 years later. I have like, you know, $2,000 in bar mitzvah money. And my parents are like, hey, your grandfather's a stockbroker. Do you want to like buy stocks and, you know, put it away in there? And I was like, no. I'm like, no. What do you want to do with it? I said, I want to give it to Uncle Alan and do what he does. He has buildings. And my parents thought I was out of my fucking mind. I'm like, I'm 13 years old. And literally I went down with him. I drove around. You know, he's like, well, which building? He loved it. He thought this was great. He's like, which building do you want to buy? And I was like, what do you got? You know, and literally like he drove me around. We're out here in Philadelphia near the University of Pennsylvania. And I'm like, he drove around. I'm like, that one. He's like, okay, why this one? I'm like, because it's the biggest one. I had no reason. I didn't know anything about anything. Right. And so I give him the $2,000. You know, I own the stair tread of this big building. Right. That's about it. Maybe the front door lock, you know. And he taught me the real estate business. And so that was kind of the start of my journey.
And as much as it takes an Uncle Al to pull up a chair at the table for you, even at such a young age, that carries forward. And I know your reputation. You and I share so many different friends in so many different places. And you are known, whether it's for what you do with the Federation, what you do with Harris Blitzer, what you do developing the urban part of Philadelphia now and putting your money where your mouth is. You're really someone who became an Uncle David, who pulls up a chair for those that aren't as fortunate either or aren't quite to the place that you're at. Looking at what you're doing in Philadelphia right now, where do you see the biggest opportunities that you're pulling up a chair, whether it be in the urban community, the Jewish community, or other places, to allow others to have that bite of the apple, an opportunity to use their skills, their knowledge, but most importantly, their desire to achieve their potential?
You know, honestly, I love motivating people. I love Like I look at me like, you know, I was laughing when you said, you know, your brother went to Harvard, biochemistry, you know, and like for me, like I tell everyone, I was like the low SAT, low GPA guy. Like I hated school. Okay. I hated college. Like, I mean, I had a great time in college, but like, I just wanted to get out and get to the real world. Right. So everyone's got kind of what motivates them. And so for me, like, listen, I've had a really good journey. I've had a lot of run, a good run. I've worked my ass off, like nothing, you know, like I love work, but I got to ask a lot of people a lot of questions along the way up. And so I'm always appreciative that folks took time to help me. And so like, I get inundated with requests. I'm sure you do too, to like advice and whatever. And like, I don't want to say that I answer everyone because that would be impossible, but like, you know, if I could do like a quick 10-minute phone call with someone and, you know, like help them out or someone do that. And you know, philanthropy is very important to my wife and I, like there's a lot of need and we've, you know, done okay. A difference. Like, I think that's so important. I really do. And so for me, like, it's rare that I don't feel like a free minute, like just mentoring or talking to somebody.
And one of the other things that I have a difficult time when I'm coaching people, because I personally had this difficulty, I always set my own self-image. I limited myself. And so even though I had, by the time I was in my 30s, made over $100 million, by the way, and lost it, I just had these ceilings. And I really try to help people to expand their ceilings, that there is a temperature gauge, there's a thermostat of life, and it applies not only to certain personality traits, but also sometimes to what we believe we can make or own or do. You obviously have expanded that into the billions, and your relationship with money is a unique one. How do you help people expand their own self-image? Because I have learned one rule from mentors like you, that you never will overachieve your own self-image.
You know, I think I tell everyone, like, you know, why not you? Why not? Right. And so like, and you know, the hardest thing, you know, and I don't know if you've went through this, but like in my late 20s to 30s, for me, like, I was like, I felt like I was always the youngest guy in the room as an entrepreneur. I felt like I was always in the arena. We'll talk about the arena, but in this arena, I always felt like I was the young guy. And so I had to talk more and I listened less. And it wasn't until I was like 35 or early 30s that I was like, I'm doing it wrong. I need to listen more and talk less. Okay. And I think that helped me achieve much greater success at that moment. Because I think I saw the field in a different way because I think I was too busy on offense and not taking it in. And so that's the advice I give people. I say like don't be limited. Like, and you know, we talk about campus apartments. At the time that I went and took campus apartments national, you know, in the 1990s, like no one was doing that. Okay. And people in like other aspects of real estate was like, oh, student housing is like, you know, animal house and no one wants that stuff and whatever. And I was kind of like, oh, great. I'm just more for me, you know, but like, but I wasn't deterred by it. I was like, why not me? And so I try to like let people know that you don't need to be like self-contained by preconceived notions, I guess is the way I do it.
I think it's great. You know, people also mine for dirt instead of mine for gold. And they're surprised when they find the dirt they're mining for instead of thinking about that gold and right. Not listening to other people think. I was saying, you know, what other people think of me is none of my business, but I will listen and learn from what you think of me. Now, you're also someone like myself that invests in a lot of different things. And you seem to invest with people that you have relationships with, everyone from LeBron, Kevin Love, to Michael Rubin, Mark Cuban, Gary, you know, similar friends that I have. Utilizing relationships in investment, how important has that been? I mean, you're developing, you know, urban, an arena of over $1 billion. And it's a lot of relationships as chairman of 76 Dev Corp that you have. How important are those relationships in the investments that you make?
Yeah, they're important for a couple of reasons. One, you can't be an expert in everything, right? And so what I've learned is if I'm investing, you know, look, and there's multiple reasons why you make an investment. If we're talking about like some of the venture deals like Gary Vee or like these others, like, you know, one, like he might have a particular, you know, focus that he's really specific on that he can add value in, right? And so I understand that skill set. So like, I'm kind of, you know, is he my jockey in that deal, right? Or am I the jockey in another deal? And so like, I look at relationships that way, just in case, to see like what people are bringing, what can I bring? Do I, and I'm very good now early on to say, I either add some value, no value, or a lot of value, right? And like, the question is, if I add no value in a deal, why am I investing in it? It's either because the people doing it like have such a great idea, and I think that they're really onto something, and no guarantees in life, and I have a lot of zeros in your venture. I think everyone does. Or I have, you know, I have a strategic network. You know, maybe it's the Campus Apartments, 25,000 tenants that, you know, this consumer product wants exposure to them, and I can help open that funnel up for them. And so for me, like, I just like to think about it. And then the third piece is the social piece, right? You get to a stage in life and like, you've busted your ass and you're kind of like, you know what? I want to have fun with people I like. I want to be in deals with people I like. I want to do business with people I like. Like, I'm tired of assholes, right? And so to the extent when you achieve a level of success, you get a little bit of the ability to do that. Do you know what I mean? That has been like the importance to like, you know, really focus on that.
It's so, my next book's name, Don't Do Business with Dick. So I will send you a copy, because it sounds like that lesson has been learned by both of us.
I mean, you know, David, look, the interesting thing is like, the whole reason I started Darko Capital, which is, you know, kind of my family office, was I saw these different opportunities, and I had friends. We would all sit around talking about deals we're doing. And I was like, you know what? I need to professionalize this or not. But like, you bring smart people together. Of the names you mentioned, they're all really smart guys or girls, and like, you figure shit out. But then like, I created Darko so that we could have a institutionalized business within kind of a loose business, so to speak, right? And so, you know, we have like an investment process, we have a CFO, like, how do we track, you know, quarter over quarter, how, you know, I'm in 96 separate deals, okay? It's a lot of shit to keep track of, right? So we need to make sure that we're doing it properly in all of that. So yeah, it's good to be around good people.
Yeah, surround yourself with the right people, the right ideas. Now, you and I not only share the same name, but I think personality-wise, from what I hear from our friends, we have one similarity, and it's a weird mix of ADD and OCD. I'm known as the most consistent person, not the most talented, but very few people can be as consistent as I am. I was joking before the show that you went to Ohio State. My favorite school is Ohio State. Both my parents went to Ohio State. I'm from Akron, Ohio, born in the same hospital as LeBron and Steph Curry. I thought I'd be the commissioner of the NBA someday because of that similarity. But what's so interesting, I would have went to Ohio State if they would have, for some reason, let me play football. But I don't know why they won. Maybe because of all the national championships. But there is a weird mix of ADD and OCD. And I think it's relative to time. I think, you know, the way I utilize time, see time, and utilize time within the context of space is unique because of these quirky personality or weird mix of who I was genetically and energetically born as. How have you seen these two traits that you admittedly have, a little bit of ADD, OCD, how has it helped you with time and space and relativity in your life?
You know, the way it's helped me is that I'm able to kind of manage multiple projects at once, right? Because I can kind of come in, come out. And like what you learn, and you know, I don't know if we're the same or different, but like, I am really good at the startup, at the idea, and at the relationship piece of building these businesses. I am happy to say now, like that, and because it takes time to have the confidence to say it, I'm an awful operator.
Okay. I try to tell Gary that. I was like, dude, you are an amazing, brilliant man, but stay out of operations.
Yeah. And so like, I just know that like, there are people, and that's the other thing that I couldn't figure out until my late 30s is I never wanted to admit that there were people smarter than me or better than me at anything.
Yeah.
Now it's like a breath of fresh air to like, know that guy, that gal, that woman, everyone's much better than me. And like, I have the confidence, and Ruben's the best at that. Like, you know, when he is like, the way he's reestablished the Fanatics management team is like, he's created people that are world-class in all these different things. And that's what I'm trying to do. You know, whether it's, you know, I'm sure we'll talk about the arena we're building. You know, I've put a world-class team together to make sure they can execute on the vision.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, getting into the arena, obviously that's one of the bigger projects that you've undertaken, and you have some great people around you. as the chairman of that project. You know, what do you look for when you get to that level in the people that you surround yourself? What are the characteristics that mean the most to get a deal that's a privately funded $1.3 billion deal, and it's a compassionate capitalist deal? It's going to revive the urban areas and provide so much opportunity in the heart of Philadelphia. But what are you really looking for in those people? Because you, as you admit, you can't do it yourself.
Yeah, look, one, they have to share the vision, okay? Two, and I'm going to come back to, but we're now up to $1.55 billion because we added $250
They'll probably get to three from my experience. They'll probably get to three. I'm just
We just added it. We announced a $250 million residential tower we're going to build on top of the arena at the same time now. Nice. But the big part is, do I get somebody that understands the goal? Like, I want to make sure you understand, here's where we're headed, okay? We're going to talk about how we get there, but you have to believe in this end game. Do you believe in the fact that for myself, Josh Harris, and David Blitzer, our goal of building the best arena in the country and do it privately funded when only five current projects in the U.S. stadiums, arenas are being privately funded? Okay. Everyone else is taking public money. And that's great that I don't diss the other owners that are doing that, but Philadelphia's the poorest big city in the country. Okay. It would not be appropriate for us to take city money for something like this, right? I want it to be the opposite. We announced a couple of weeks ago that we're going to create $1 billion of net new tax revenue for the city of Philadelphia over 30 years. I'm proud of that. Like, I want to be a contributor to bringing Philadelphia back to life and reinvigorating it. And so as long as those people who sign up to come to work for me, and by the way, everyone I hired, I said, you're signing up for an 8-year project. Okay. So like, if you're not prepared to make that long-term commitment, this might not be the right fit for you. Okay.
And I think, you know, as we finish up, there's an emotional aspect that we have to point out as well. When we take great entrepreneurs like yourself that are heavily involved, not only just into philanthropy, not only just in reviving and revitalizing and evolving our own hometowns, but there's something about sports. And to point out, you know, coming from Akron, Ohio, representing the Pro Football Hall of Fame, seeing what LeBron James and the Cavaliers did for Cleveland. And you can look now, it's easy to look back, the economics of what providing... Oh, yeah. Providing the state-of-the-art arenas, providing a winning team does for everybody in a city. It's incredible. So as you talk about the $1 billion that we can show in tax dollars, that's nothing over 30 years by providing the state-of-the-art facilities and a winning team, which because people want to play in it, makes, I think, an exponential difference.
But, you know, even like in the short term, I'm going to create 9,000 construction jobs. Okay. Right. And those are all Philadelphians that are going to come to work and make sure that, for the next 5 years are going to have a great job with me building this thing. Like, that makes me happy that I can look after all those families and do something great in a time where there's very few large scale construction projects going on in the city.
Right. And a lot of those jobs, especially over the next few years, are few and far between. And those are the subtleties of success. I have a saying that entrepreneurs are going to save the world. We just got to give them time. I'm a huge environmentalist, sustainable technology guy, because not that I think that recycling is going to save the world, but it gives the entrepreneur enough time to turn plastic into food or into energy or fill up the hole in our atmosphere, whatever issues that have been created. It's going to be people like you, David,
that us, are going to people like literally- us.
Like us. Thank you. I will gladly be in your circles or sphere of influence. You know, David, one of the things a lot of people ask me to do because of the relationship capital I have with the biggest stars, celebrities, athletes, entertainers, is to do business with them. And with Neutral Foods, you pretty much have the biggest stars in the world working with you. You know, number one, you know, do they bring to the table the same type of spirit of excellence that they have on the court, for example, with LeBron, into a business? And how difficult is it to have them be a part of those ventures?
You know, first, you know, I have a strict policy that I only bring people into deals. Like I always, here's how I do it. I say, I am doing this deal. Here's how I like it. I make sure that I write the biggest check of anyone in the group so that if it goes bad, some of these things go bad, I lost the most. You know, Neutral Foods is a great example. Darko has been investing alongside one of Bill Gates's companies called Breakthrough Energy Ventures, and where they focus is on climate tech, climate neutral things. You know, what do they have? And so Neutral Foods is a really interesting idea. It's about how in the supply chain can you do something that becomes carbon neutral? And so my view is the future of food, no differently than, you know, 10 years ago, you didn't have an organic section or you didn't have a gluten-free section. I think like carbon neutral will be an issue. Okay. And so how, and we're starting with dairy, your milk and butter and things like that, and it'll go into other products, but how can you produce that? You know, one is, you know, one of the largest producers of methane are cows.
Yeah.
Okay. So you, there are, there's a new type of feed you can create to reduce the methane emission. Okay. And so what's interesting about today's, you know, entertainer, whether John Legend's a good friend of mine, we're business partners and some things, and you know, he's in the deal. When I went around, so guy, they're like, you know, everyone's like shooting the shit. What are you guys working on? I said, I got an interesting one I'm doing with Bill Gates's guys. And it's a new category. It's going to take time kind of, but like everyone got it. Like, you know, like, and they're all, you know, Maverick and LeBron are really sophisticated investors. They were like, we want to come in. Okay. Kevin Love, who's a buddy, you know, he was like, you know, discerning, like they're all, everyone's asking good questions, same with John Legend. And like, what helped though is, the guys at Neutral Foods were kind of like science guys that are creating this technology to do this and not really marketing guys. And so now I think today's athlete or entertainer or, you know, someone like me who's investing, we want to be value add to the investments, right? Like it's the old days of like, hey, just put my name on it and give me some shares. Like most companies see right through that and don't want to do that, right? They want real people that'll be involved and add value. And I think for me, I will only share it with folks that want to add value for the company.
Which is really funny because I was just on TMZ about Tom Brady's strategic advisory to Delta. And I was like, how many times do you think that man's flown Delta in the last 20 years? And what advice is he giving? You know, he's not there like the team captain like he was on the field. Thank goodness anymore. But you definitely are an entrepreneur that puts his money where his mouth is. And I love the philosophy that, hey, credibility wise, I'm going to put the most money in the deal because there are a lot of entrepreneurs out there that make symbolic investments. And then I think bring in people under a false facade of commitment. And you're not someone that does that. Thank you so much. It's amazing.